Welcome to American Indian and Alaskan Native Living, a program designed to educate and inspire listeners throughout Indian country. American Indian and Alaskan Native Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he is here today to help you learn more about your health. Here is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We've got an amazing show lined up for you because it deals with something that every single one of us deals with at some time in our life, often at multiple junctures in our life. We're talking about grief today and how to go through it successfully. I've got two folks who have spent their life, a good portion of their life, as grief coaches speaking around the world, Karen and Steve Nicola, great to have you guys with us today.
Good to be here, David. Thank you.
Thank you, David. We're happy to be here.
Now, you know, folks today, they know the coaching industry. There's life coaches, there's exercise coaches, but grief coaches may not be on people's radar screen, and they may even be thinking, why would anybody want to be a grief coach? It sounds like a pretty morbid business. There must be a story behind that.
Well, I don't know about anybody else, but there is nothing more satisfying for me than to be the witness of someone who comes to see us in deep suffering and pain and walk with them through that to healing and wholeheartedness. To witness that transformation is so satisfying. So it's a blessing to be a grief coach.
Yeah, grief coaching is a little more hands-on in terms of people's grief. We'd spend quite a bit of time listening to people talk about the loss of whatever it might be. It can be more than just death. There's many, many things that happen to people that cause them to be in grief. But the advantage of grief coaching, and on one level, it doesn't discount therapists or counselors at any level, but it does give us ability to give them more hands-on activities and strategies they can use to interact with their own grief. So when we finish with a session, they have some tools in their grief toolkit that they can take home and begin to use right away.
So tell us about your story, because I know you have a pretty dramatic story, the two of you, that really engaged you in this field.
Go ahead, Annie.
When your firstborn 3.5-year-old son dies of leukemia, our world changed. Our lives changed. We had quite a journey even getting to his 3.5-year mark when he was diagnosed at age 2 of leukemia. We found ourselves in great distress in that, first of all, our son is now seriously diagnosed, but the consequences of the timing of all that left us homeless, jobless, insuranceless, and another baby number 2 ready to arrive in about 4 weeks from his diagnosis.
Wow.
So it was a cascade of circumstances in our life that were really overwhelming. And I know for Steve and myself, there is no one else to lean on to but God, and lean into that presence of the one who loves us most is with us in all of this.
And we were so thankful. I had just finished a teaching career up in Alaska, and we just moved to Montana. So we were in Billings, Montana, when our son was initially diagnosed with acute lymphocytic leukemia. And that move allowed us to be very flexible as to where we could go immediately for his healthcare. There wasn't the pediatric oncology, pediatric cancer facilities in Alaska at that time. This was in the early 80s. So it allowed us to be able to hop on a plane the very day that we found out from the pediatricians there in Billings, Montana. We flew out to Sacramento, and the very next day we found ourselves at Stanford's Children's Hospital in Palo Alto, California. And that began a journey of a lot of stress, to be honest. And yet, in the midst of it all, we saw other families in that pediatric unit with all the children that all had different types of cancers. And little bald heads, lots of kids hooked up to IVs for their chemo or whatever. But the thing that we noticed right away was that the people who didn't have something bigger than themselves, to lean on or to lean into. Were quite agitated, quite depressed, very morose, and really just kind of were just surviving from moment to moment. Karen and I fortunately had each other there, but we also had, our lean-to was God. And a lot of people that were there began to see that that was made a difference in the in our peacefulness about it. Did we always feel peacefulness? No. We're not saying we did it totally right at all, but we certainly learned to lean into the fact that these were some things that we couldn't change.
So one by one, we found the miracle, I guess you can call it, of supplying for all of those needs. Dawson went into remission. Steve was hired on a job. We received state insurance for our son's medical expenses. Our daughter was born a week late. We were able to relocate in a little house in Northern California near a pediatric office that specialized in hematology and child cancers. And we lived a happy, wonderful life for another year and a half.
So, I mean, it's remarkable, your story. I mean, the agony that you went through. I mean, basically, it sounds like pretty much losing everything, or you're looking at the possibility of losing a child. You've lost a job. You've lost your support network as far as friends. And it's obvious to those of us listening that, faith was a big stabilizing factor, faith in a creator and in God. Many of my listeners can resonate with that. Others may not. They may say, well, I have a different perspective on spirituality. And I know you folks, having walked this journey now for so many years with so many people, you walk with people regardless of what their faith and spiritual background is. But we're listening attentively because I know your story is still unfolding as you're telling it to us. So your boy went into remission for better than a year, is that right?
Yeah, about a year and a half, David. He it was in full remission, and then we took him in for routine blood tests at the pediatrician's office, and then they sent it in for testing just as they usually did on a quarterly basis. And we got the dreaded phone call that he had relapsed. He was in remission, he had relapsed. And generally, with a child of his nature, he was so sick when he started his chemo regime that he wasn't a good candidate to hold on to his remission. And if he fell out, the possibility of him maintaining a second remission was very small. So the oncologist told us, whatever you two decide, we'll support you. Well, anybody that's listening in the medical field knows that when an oncologist tells you, whatever you decide, we'll support you, you know that they've done all that they can do. And so the second diagnosis was probably more traumatic to us, possibly, than the first. And at that point, we had to make some hard decisions. Do we still try to reenact more stronger chemotherapy? What do we do? And we did try for a little while, but we realized that this was not the right way to go. And so we just simply stopped all therapy at that point, gave him some basic medicines to keep him comfortable. And then we said, we've done the best that we can do with what we know humanly. And that was in January. And we had a lot of conversations with lots of people about what we could do. There was talk about doing bone marrow transplants, but that was in 1985. And bone marrow transplants for children was very much in its infancy at that point, and the risks were just too high to put a little guy like our son through, and we decided against that. And so what happened at that point, honey?
Well, we lived one day at a time. Very grateful. It was an interesting transition. When you know your child is going to die, at least for me, when I knew that Dawson was going to die, every moment is precious. Every day is precious. And I thought of people who would say goodbye to their children for school, and they had no idea that they would not see them again in the rest of the life. Because of some accident that would happen, and in today's case, some shooting at a school, any of these kinds of tragedies that take place around us in our lives. But I knew that there would be a day where I wouldn't have my son with me. And so I just lived to the best I could, fully each of those days. I did experience a phenomenal encounter with forgiveness.
Hmm.
In that, I don't think that there's a parent alive who would say that they were a perfect, flawless parent, who would say, oh, I have not one regret, or I don't have any second guesses, or I wished or could have, would have, should have done something differently. I believe every one of us know that we mishapped. We made mistakes. We did things errantly. We sometimes did things on purpose that were not best for us or our children. And those, carrying that into our grief after death is such a heavy burden.
Hmm.
It's phenomenal.
So it's as if you were blaming yourself for your son's death to some extent, or was it something bigger than that?
Mm. Oh, that's pretty big to blame yourself.
I'm not minimizing that, but I mean, because, you know, we speak about guilt and all, but sometimes there's other issues. I mean, emotional issues or things with a 3.5-year-old. I mean, that's going to be different than if it was someone 18 or 20 is what I'm getting at.
What with the initial diagnosis, David, we, when you hear that, you know, we believe your son has leukemia, you do a quite a lengthy
inventory
mm-hmm. in the back of your head of what did we do? Because
right.
he was not old enough to have had any unhealthy lifestyle choices at that point, you know, was there things that we ate, things that we did or whatever that influenced him to have this? And for a long time, and I know even as a man, I thought, man, I've really failed my son. I should have kept him from getting cancer. Many men feel that way when their child is taken from them from whatever, for whatever reason, under whatever circumstances. But because we're just kind of wired that way as men, particularly. Women feel that way too, but men feel, you know, we're wired to protect and to provide. And when we can't protect and provide for our children particularly, but also for our wives and extended family, we can many times feel like we're a failure, that we let our family down. And I felt that for a long time. And I had to come to the conclusion finally that we were doing the best we could at that time, and that we were not knowingly responsible for his getting leukemia. We live on planet Earth. Planet Earth is not a safe place to live.
Fair enough.
News, and you can find that anywhere in the world right now. There's flooding and fires and tornadoes and earthquakes. So we realize that our address is planet Earth. So there's so many environmental factors that could have affected his getting it. We still don't, you know, obviously I don't have a cure for it today after all these years. So that was a really big thing to be, you know, to have that initial diagnosis, that second diagnosis, and realize this is it. And so we had to just simply let it be.
So I know, Karen, you were wanting to go in the direction of forgiveness. And the reason why I asked that initial question was because often we talk about forgiveness in relationships. It does involve, you know, that strongly that relational aspect or some kind of, you know, rift sometimes in relationships. But I'm also reading between the lines that a lot of that forgiveness has to do with forgiving oneself.
Mm-hmm.
So we're definitely interested in exploring that, because I heard a couple of presentations that the two of you recently gave, and I know that was one of the big keys that you feel that often people don't go through grief well because they don't handle this forgiveness piece particularly well. Did I hear that correctly?
You absolutely did, David. And that's where, for me, it is the big thing. It is where our grief transitions from a hurtful and stuck cycle into something so much better for us.
We have to talk more about this. And I know you guys have some great resources that my listeners are going to be excited to learn about. But we have to step away just briefly. I'm talking to Karen and Steve Nicola. They are grief coaches, grief educators. We're going to talk about some of their resources and some amazing things that can help you, whether you're able to engage with them after this program or not. Some practical strategies coming up next after these important messages.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please reach out to us on the web at AIANL.org. That stands for American Indian Alaska Native Living. Again, AIANL.org. Or you can call us at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
We are strong, we are resilient, and we will get through this together. But these are stressful times, and it's important to also practice good self-care. It's normal to feel overwhelmed, anxious, or afraid, but there is hope. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, stay in touch with your community, and know that you are not alone. Learn more at wearebroadcasters.com/hope, furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
When Jim died, I wondered if I would be able to keep the farm. Then I heard about the USDA's loan program for socially disadvantaged farmers and ranchers. It's for women and minorities who may be having trouble getting credit. Once I was approved, the USDA's Farm Service Agency helped me get the credit I needed. Now I don't have to sell, and I can pass the farm down to my kids the way Jim's dad passed it down to him. I know he'd like that.
Contact your local USDA Service Center or visit www.fsa.usda.gov.
Social Security is with you through life's journey from birth to retirement. As your life changes year to year, so do your needs. For over 80 years, Social Security has helped to meet your needs and is committed to improving access to the services that make a difference in your life. Today, you can verify your earnings, estimate your future benefits, apply for retirement, manage your benefits, and even change your address, all from the comfort of your home. Social Security's online services help put you in control with secure access to your information anytime, anywhere, allowing you to spend more time with family, friends, or simply just enjoying the day. Social Security, securing today and tomorrow. See what you can do online at socialsecurity.gov.
Produced at U.S. taxpayer expense.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. I'm with the Nicholas, Steve and Karen. They are our guests helping us to deal with this universal topic of grief and grieving. And as Steve, you pointed out earlier, it's not just death that causes us to grieve. Maybe before we get into the topic too much more, if some folks are thinking, well, hey, I don't know why they're talking to me. I'm in my 20s. I'm not even married. How am I going to lose anything? Cast the picture a little bit more broadly for those who are tuning in today.
Well, I imagine that probably every person that's in earshot of this has had some kind of loss in their life. It may have been that their puppy died when it was small, it got hit, their kitty died, grandma or grandpa died unexpectedly, or maybe they were planning on it. Maybe a classmate at school, his mother died of cancer, her father died of cancer, her brother died from an accident. Where we live here in Northern California, tens of thousands of people have lost their homes in the last 10 years due to fire. It's very traumatic. Over on the East Coast right now, people are losing their homes, their livelihood due to flooding. Tremendous amount of grief with that, particularly when you lose a home, because when a person is in shock and grief, the natural place you want to go to grieve is where?
Your house. Yeah.
Your house. And when the very thing that you were going to go to grieve over is gone, because it's what was lost, that complicates it even more. But there's a lot of more subtle things. You want to talk about some of the more maybe unrecognized areas of grief, Karen?
Well, there's when relationships end for a variety of reasons, or when your health declines and your abilities are no longer the same as they used to be. Sometimes the loss of a job or even retirement are things that we grieve deeply over. So there are many, many life experiences that are overlooked as something that needs just to stop, pause, pay attention, and let's let ourselves grieve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another thing that I'd want to mention to your audience, because I realize we have a diverse cultural listenership here, as with most radio stations, but what we've learned in our short years of doing this is that everybody will grieve.
Mm.
You cannot choose not to grieve when you've had a major tragedy. It's like for us men, I used to say, every man maintains his car, okay, or his motorcycle or his boat. Now, it may mean that he never changes his oil. He never checks the air in the tire. He never looks at the transmission fluid. He just drives it until it dies. That's his maintenance program, you see. Or the guy that checks his oil and changes it every 2,000 miles and checks the tires every time he gets in it. That's the guy at the other end of the spectrum. But what we have realized, no matter what a person's ethnic culture background is, whether it's Native American, if it's Hispanic, whether it's African American, whether it's Asian, whether it's Anglo, whether it's South American or European, what the common thing that we find that binds all of us together is, no matter how we express it outwardly, we all feel it deeply inside of ourselves.
Hmm.
And we have to recognize that every one of us still carries a sense of loss, a sense of sadness, a sense of mourning. And so when that happens, we may show it differently, and there's no right or wrong to that. But we just have to give each other space to realize that not everybody is going to express or look the same way when two people from two different cultures could lose a wife, let's say, two men. One man may not show any emotion whatsoever. The other man may show a tremendous amount of sadness of countenance. He's crying. He's morose for a long time. Neither one of those are necessarily wrong, but they are both still feeling it probably equally inside.
Hmm. Karen, I know we want to come back to this topic of forgiveness and how this plays in to all of these losses. So kind of help us to understand that connection. And we've already gotten this idea that often we blame ourselves when bad things happen. Is this a big part of the challenge in grieving?
It is a big part of the challenge in grieving, because we know, if we're honest, what we've swept under the rugs, what we've stuffed in the back mental closets of our hearts and minds. And we carry that weight of that subconsciously, if not consciously. And there is a remedy for that weight. There is a freedom for that weight. And it is called forgiveness.
Hmm.
And to forgive ourselves, to recognize that I don't have to hold on to this pain any longer. Now, coming from a paradigm that I trust that God is my originator of this forgiveness, that it's nothing I could have originated on my own, but in God's supreme creatorship, he creates the capacity to recreate by forgiving.
Hmm.
Now, that's an action of trust or faith, that what he has provided is absolutely available, because it comes forth from his source, not from mine. That is huge for me. That was a huge turning point for me, to be forgiven of my mommy mistakes. I had said and done things out of impatience and unkindness and things that I had regretted, as I think anybody has in a relationship. If only I'd said, or if only I'd done. And in many cases, it's just a simple matter of writing an apology letter to the person who has died. Taking responsibility. I did these things, and I am so sorry it hurt you. I apologize. And that in itself is a cleansing and a freeing. It's no longer secrets locked away in our hearts and minds. It has now been released. And even if the person that has died, or the job we have left, or the relationship that's ended in divorce, it's not intended so much for that individual to see, hear, or read, as it is for us to let go of it, to claim it, and to say, I apologize, I own it. And that is very, very powerful.
As I listened to your presentations recently, you were at a big conference sharing some of these concepts. It seemed like one of the barriers that got in the way of successfully navigating grief, if we can use that terminology, was anger. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if you can speak to that a bit.
Well, that was the area, David, that I experienced. Karen had some at some point, but nowhere near the
long term,
yeah, that I experienced. As I mentioned earlier, we men really feel deeply when someone we love close to us gets very, is injured or gets very sick or dies. And in my case, I felt like I had failed my son. And my definition of, and what happens, it's a tension that I somehow failed as a man, as a father, as a husband, as a human being, And those are natural things. I've heard many men that I've worked with over the years express the same thing. I let my family down. I let my child down. I let my wife down. I didn't realize she was so sick. She was sicker than I thought she was. And if I just told my son to not go in the car, that time, I'm talking about someone else. If I just held him back for just two more seconds, he wouldn't have gotten hit or whatever.
Right, right.
And so we men feel that we've lost control. And my definition, there's many, many definitions of anger. But for me, it's a loss of control of people and circumstances and or circumstances. So in my case, and with a lot of men, we couldn't control that our child got sick or our wife got sick or if our family member got sick, nor could we keep them from dying. And we're so used to being in control. And so when we're out of control, think about when someone cuts you off in traffic or does something that harms your house or they say something derogatory about a family member. We can't control the words that come out of their mouth many times. And so we feel frustration and anger. And that's what happens a lot with people in grief is they couldn't, particularly men, is that we couldn't control whatever happened to our loved one who died. And so unless we can identify that the anger initially is not a problem, it's hanging on to it. And for me, I'd have to admit that I realized that I was angry that I couldn't control the death of my son for almost 20 years.
Wow.
And even though I come from a Christian context and I have a belief in God, my humanness still wouldn't turn loose of the fact that somehow I had let my child down. And so I decided I was just going to be kind of a slow burn.
So is the essence of anger you're trying to blame someone, whether it's yourself or someone else, for the problem and take something out on them? Is that the essence of it?
Oh, that would work. My anger was mostly self-directed. Karen wants that because this lady that's sitting next to me was the recipient of that for a long, long time.
I like what you asked, David, because in Steve's case, it was self-blame. Then his anger went inward towards himself and the things he would say about himself and the lack of patience with himself. It was very painful to witness that in my husband.
That's not what she signed up for to get married.
Well, none of us do, but life seems to throw all these detours in our way, if we want to put it mildly. You guys have an amazing experience, but you haven't stayed stuck in the place that that you struggled with. Steve, you were talking about your anger. We're going to talk in the next segment about how you came through that and how both of you have channeled some of this energy and some of this experience into helping literally thousands upon thousands of people. I'm David DeRose. My guests today, Karen and Steve Nicola. We're going to be talking more with them, practical things that can help you in whatever area of grief you're facing. Got a lot more coming up in the second half of our show. Please stay by.
American Indian and Alaska Native Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please contact us on the web at aianl.org or call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
A message from the National Police Association. It used to be that any able-bodied person would offer to assist a police officer in danger. Now, passersby are more likely to take a video. There's a better use for your phone when an officer's in trouble. Call 911. Tell the operator where you are and what you see. Then, start your video to provide evidence later. To learn more about how you can assist law enforcement, visit nationalpolice.org. That's nationalpolice.org.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you can't measure it on your bathroom scale. Sorting out a mental health concern is not something to attempt on your own. You won't find a bipolar disorder by looking at a thermometer. Like many other health conditions, help for mental illness takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a stick-on bandage. So the sooner you seek treatment, the better. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, don't go it alone. Find out what to do. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support. That's samhsa.gov/support.
Using meth taught me everything about freedom, only not like you think. It taught me how easy it is to lose your freedom. If you think meth is taking control of you, ask for help. You have the power to be truly free. I know. I'm Jan, and I'm free from meth.
If you or someone you know is struggling with meth, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential treatment referral. Learn more at samhsa.gov/meth.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to the second half of today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Steve and Karen Nicola, my guests today, we're speaking about grief. It's a universal experience. All of us deal with loss. We've talked about some of the many forms that loss can take and some of the common challenges that we have dealing with anger, negotiating forgiveness. Steve, when we stepped away, you'd been talking about, both you and Karen, talking about how difficult it was for you to have lost your young son and the anger that you had. As Karen described it, from her perspective, it seemed like it was anger mostly originally directed at yourself, but I gathered it then became manifest in how you dealt in other relationships. How did you get through that?
Well, that's a really good question, David. And I want to also preface this, that this anger and loss, grief losses can come, think of the people who are still angry about losing a job or losing about the unfairness of their house being swept away or burned down or any number of losses, anger can be associated with that because, again, we can't control that took place. We found there was just a couple things that were very helpful to kind of put an end cap on this would be to say that one of the things I had to learn to do was to ask for help. And it's not an unmanly thing to ask, to admit that I needed help. You know, we men nowadays, we think if we go to YouTube and ask, how do I tune my car up, we think we're pretty smart. But when it comes to the most complex thing in the world is our mind and our emotions, and we think that somehow we can handle that on our own, we really need the help of someone outside of ourselves, whether it's a fellow grief coach, a grief therapist, or a belief in God, I believe, that helps us through our grief experience. And knowing that, at least from my context, God never was angry with me for being angry with him and being angry with the world around me. I didn't know his heart. I didn't know his actual thoughts toward me during my time of loss as well as I could have. Years have given me a different perspective on that. I'm thankful to know that anger doesn't have to be my experience on an ongoing basis. I can turn that over to God. I can turn it over to someone else that can hear me out and give me some feedback and some perspective. And I can move forward and move out of that grief experience onto something more healing and more positive.
Excellent. Karen, you dealt, no doubt, with some anger too, but maybe in a different way.
Yes, it was a different way. I chose to do what had been working for me from day one, which was to put my stuff on paper. And I have a vivid memory of one day being very angry at our by then 2-year-old daughter girl. and she wasn't taking a nap, and I needed her to take a nap because I needed some rest, and I was very impatient with her. Anyway, I had three or four attempts to put her into bed, and she kept popping up. Finally, I just screamed at her and told her to stay in bed, and I went to my room and closed the door and started to put my anger on paper. And I wrote and wrote and wrote how angry I was at Joanna. Then I said, oh, no, I'm not angry at Joanna. I'm really angry at Dawson for dying and leaving me with these horrible feelings. No, no, no. I wrote and wrote and wrote. And no, I wasn't angry at Dawson. I was angry at Steve for leaving me and him going off to work. And I continued to put that on paper and then realized, no, I'm not angry at Steve. I'm really angry at God. And there I could just let my anger go. Sit, because all I knew was that God was bigger than my anger and he could do with it what I needed him to do with it. So my mode of operating was to use pencil and paper. And that's what actually formulated the book Comfort for the Day, Living Through the Seasons of Grief.
Well, tell us a little bit about this, because I know a lot of folks have benefited from that book. Years ago, you and I, Karen, talked about the book on air. It's been out, I think, what, maybe 30 years or more? Am I remembering that right?
From 1991, yes. There was a brief little period of time, maybe a 2 or 3 years, where it was at the bottom of the list, but then we republished and here we go again. So Comfort for the Day, Living Through the Seasons of Grief, is not our story. So it's not a book about us and our son and our grief and our healing of that. But it is the result of the healing that took place in my life. And that result combined two things: sage wisdom that came out of scripture that was extremely applicable to my broken heart. And then the opportunity to embrace that wisdom and align it with my broken heart and interact with it on paper. So I didn't have a therapist at the time. I didn't have a grief coach. I mean, this was 40 years ago.
Wow.
And so I just poured my heart on paper. I poured my questions out on paper. And today we're learning that this is actually a viable strategy that science is validating. And it's so exciting.
So we want to talk more about this particular strategy. But before we do, if someone is saying, hey, I'm already tracking with Karen and Steve, and I want to get a copy of this book, Comfort for the Day, is there one good place to go? Do you guys have a website? Is that a good place?
No, we do. Well, the best place to go to obtain a copy, and we have it both in English and in Spanish now.
Nice.
Comfort for the Day, Living Through the Seasons of Grief, can be found on our website, which is comfortfortheday.com.
Now, this is too easy. Comfort for, F-O-R,
the day.com?
Okay. So, and if I go there, I can pick up the book. How about if I don't want the book? Can I get anything else there that would help me?
Oh, my. Let Karen tell you a couple of the other. There's lots of other resources on there, too. And to find the book, though, you'll just need to click on the little tab that says store, and then it'll take you, take care of you from there. We're having a very, very nice little special on our books right now. So people are saving, getting them for less than what we would sell them to a bookstore for.
So, oh, wow. That is a very good deal.
It's a very good special.
So comfortfortheday.com services provides resources for both the griever and their supportive friends. So you might not be in a loss and grief experience right now, but you might know somebody who is. So at our website, there are blogs for supportive friends, and there are blogs for those who are grieving.
Wow.
Wonderful resources to scroll through, things that speak to holiday seasons for both the grievers and supportive friends, unique and common experiences that grievers have. So yes, that's a really great resource to go to. At our store, we also supply what we call cards that comfort. And those are not your typical sympathy cards. These are cards that actually acknowledge what someone is experiencing through the death of a spouse or the death of a child or the death of a parent or an anniversary of some kind, or even weeks or months later when everybody else has forgotten. How wonderful to get a card that acknowledges that you're still grieving.
The nice thing about the cards are that Karen wrote the text on them.
Okay, very good. Well, now, the most recent connection I had with you folks was through some meetings that you were doing. You're holding workshops and other presentations, and I gathered that this is not a strange setting for you, that you folks travel, you do events for communities, for faith communities, other groups. Is that something that someone can also connect with you through the comfortfortheday.com website?
Absolutely. There's a page to leave your comment, and we receive several requests a year for, would you please come speak to our organization? And it's fine if it's a faith-based organization. It's fine if it's a business organization.
Just next week, we'll be speaking to a whole staff of a rather large funeral home conglomerate here in the Sacramento area, Northern California. Mm. Karen has spoken to a large community down in Austin, Texas, that provides health care for all the county employees in the state of Texas. We find just on a financial level, outside of the area of feelings and grief and things, unresolved grief or unattended to grief can cost businesses and corporations well over $100 billion a year.
Wow.
People come to work because they have to, but maybe their mind, they've set their bodies on so they don't lose a job, but they are more at risk of getting injured or making mistakes mm-hmm. or calling in sick. And so that's how businesses lose so much because of this.
So a tribal entity, a tribal corporation, a non-native employer, I mean, anybody basically could benefit from paying attention to this topic, whether they engage with you folks or with someone else, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Well, we want to come back to something that you were speaking about that tied in with your book, Karen, and you were speaking about writing. And one of the things that I picked up on in your recent conference was this fact that when you ask people to write, you recognize somewhere into this that some people were looking at this as kind of an onerous task, something they couldn't do. Tell us a little bit more about that, because I'm sure there are people now hearing, yeah, writing, that may have worked for Karen, but that won't work for me. Talk to us a little bit more about that topic.
And I love those people, because the real deal of it is that we tell our clients, please stop writing. I don't want you to write. Writing is an academic experience. And for most of us, that academic experience was not pleasant. And so our natural conscious and subconscious response to that is to shut down. It's like, I didn't like language arts class when I was in high school or elementary school. It asked me to write. I don't remember all the rules of writing. I'm not going to get the sentence right or the punctuation right. So right up from the get-go, I tell my clients, please stop writing. I don't want you to write. So if you notice, I've referred to it as putting my stuff on paper.
Tell us the difference.
The big difference is one is therapeutic and healing, and the other one is academic. And if I'm in deep pain, my pain is messy, it's disorganized, it's chaotic, it's unpredictable. It has nothing to do with the rules of the written language.
So if I'm looking at someone who's following your counsel, I'm going to look at them and saying they're writing, but you would tell me, no, they're just putting stuff down on paper. You want to de-emphasize the fact that they have to make sense or anything. Am I getting the message?
You're getting the message. So we've created a new word for it. It's called PISOP or PISOPing. And it means simply just put your stuff on paper, PYSOP, because everybody has stuff. We all have this random, chaotic, crazy processes that are going on in our heart and our mind. And it can feel like it's just endless, going round and round and round. And so there's a way to funnel it outside of our bodies and experience the relief, the release, the healing, because it creates space for the calm and the peace to come behind it. Whereas if we just hold all of that inside of our minds and hearts, it will make our bodies sick.
So PISOPing, David, is like, think of a large overinflated balloon that's about ready to pop. And we don't want it to pop all at once when it comes to our emotions, because then that can come out as anger or inappropriately. Mm-hmm. So PISOPing, putting your stuff on paper, just think of putting a little pin sticking little pins in that balloon and letting it let out air at a measured release. So it's not something that happens all at once. It's interesting that this is nothing new.
Wow. I'm getting the idea. I think my folks tuning in are as well. I know you guys have a whole bunch of other very practical insights. We've just got one segment left, but in that last segment, I know we've got a lot of ground to cover. If you're tuning in today, you're listening to Karen and Steve Nicola. I'm Dr. David DeRose. More practical counsel in our final segment about dealing with grief successfully. Stay tuned.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
I'm just texting him back.
I'm just posting a story.
I'm just changing the song.
I'm just...
No. When it comes to distracted driving, just don't. Sending a text takes your eyes off the road for just 5 seconds, but in that time, your car can travel the length of an entire football field. Any distracted driving just isn't worth it.
Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
What is a number story?
My number story started with fear and a lack of support, and it has led me to be there for others.
A number story begins in our childhood with ACEs, adverse childhood experiences.
My number story begins with the separation from my father and the emotional abandonment from my mother, and leads to me being a role model to not only myself, but those around me by becoming the person that wasn't there for me.
ACEs are so common, 2/3 of us have one.
My number story begins with drug abuse and homelessness, and leads to realizing that I can live life by my own standards.
A study found the more ACEs, the more likely we may experience a host of serious health effects, physical and mental, but that doesn't need to be the case. Your ACE number is simply an entry point to your own story. Where it leads is up to you.
My number story begins with years of emotional abuse, and leads to peace, clarity, and security in my self-worth.
Take control of where your number story leads at numberstory.org.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back for our final segment of today's edition of American Indian and Alaska Native Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Steve and Karen Nicola, they've been talking with us about their work as grief coaches, growing out of their own lived experience, helping people on this journey. Steve and Karen, as we were speaking at the break, we were talking about putting things on paper, and our minds went to kind of a common author that has inspired all of us, speaking about King David, who wrote those Psalms. Some of our listeners actually know that we do a weekly study on the Book of Psalms. So for those who relate to that genre of writing, of written expression, we've been doing this for over a year on Tuesday nights. So if you're hearing about it for the first time and you're one of our listeners, you can simply go to timelesshealinginsights.org, and you can look at our weekly series. We call it Healing Insights from the Psalms. You're welcome to join us and take part in the dialogue. I'm mentioning that now, Steve and Karen. I'm thinking, boy, you know, you guys would be great to be guest teachers sometime on that program. If you're ever free at 5 p.m. Pacific on a Tuesday night, do you think we might be able to get you behind a microphone and lead out in one of our sessions?
We'd be honored.
Sounds great.
That sounds like it.
Okay. I don't usually ask people on the spot when they're on air, but thanks for letting all our listeners know that they can look forward to engaging with you on that platform.
We'd love to.
Well, we got to come back to this aspect of writing. And, you know, the connection with King David, of course, many of the Psalms, you know, they're described as Psalms of Lament. and he's speaking about some pretty negative things. Steve, as we were speaking off air, you noticed, though, that those psalms often don't end the same way they start. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it's interesting as we've started reading through more, not every psalm, but particularly the psalms that David wrote, because the psalms were written by several different authors, but particularly the ones that David wrote, many of them, not all of them, but many of them begin with a rant. David is upset. Why do the heathen, why are they prospering? Why are they raging against me and I'm having to hide? And it was a lot of these were written down when he was on the run from Saul. But as you read through a psalm, you'll see that there is a transmutation of thought from angry, frustrated to more of just, you can almost, it's like a child who's been crying in your arms. And they finally just take that one big, and they make a sigh and they just nuzzle in your neck and they just rest. And I just sense David just kind of just falling into, as it were, the arms of God and just resting and leaving it up to him. And Karen has found particularly that putting stuff on paper is so healing. I've used it with many of my male clients. They are using the terminology now, piesopping, and they find it to be so helpful to be able just to get all that stuff that's inside of them. And it is different. When we talk, the words come out and go right back in our ears. But when we put stuff on paper, it comes out of our body, as it were, out of our thoughts and right onto paper, and it stays there.
Well, now talk to us about this fear, because I know a lot of people, they say, if I put stuff down on paper, someone's going to see that, or I don't want anyone to know what I'm feeling. Can you help allay those anxieties?
Oh, totally. I had one mother who kept her Comfort for the Day book, which provides for a lot of piesopping in there, between the mattress and box springs of her bed, so her kids would never find it. I've had others who will piesop and then put what they put on paper through a paper shredder and shred it and it's gone. One of the activities that includes forgiveness is a piesopping activity to forgive someone who has hurt or wounded us. And that goes in the fire and burns to ash.
Now, I know we define this piesop, but folks, if they didn't catch that description, this is an acronym. It's an abbreviation for five words. Give us those again in case someone has lost this and they say, what is this? Pies? Help us again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. P is for put. Your, why, stuff on paper. P-Y-S-O-P. Put your story, put your stuff on paper. Pie sock.
Okay. We got the message now. It's just getting it out. You can burn it. You can put it under your mattress. No one has to see it. It's just getting these emotions out. So we've talked about some critical things. We've talked about forgiveness. We've talked about dealing with anger. We've talked about putting things on paper. Are those some of the major tools in the toolkit for resolving or kind of navigating the seasons of grief? Or are there some other things that we need to get out on the table before we close this show?
David, I'm glad you mentioned that. We work as grief coaches, and we're not here to put in a plug for ourselves. We're saying we are simply so overwhelmed so often when we're done with a session with people who are struggling in this area. And we ask ourselves, from the nature of the conversations that we're having with these grieving individuals, how do most of the people in the world get through their grief experience without some extra help? I can't perform an appendectomy on myself. I can't do heart surgery. I can't set my own broken bones. I need the help of an expert outside of myself. We can do that for people. We work via Zoom around the world. But our plea for people is don't try to do this alone. You can, 99% of the time, it may feel like it's gone away. It's just like a splinter. It just goes underground, but it's just there and festers. You need the help. In 99% of the cases, need someone to help walk you through it and help you come to a positive conclusion. And so that would be our plea to people as we're finishing up here, is to, we're happy to work with people via Zoom or on the phone nationwide. Let us know and we'll help you find somebody in your area that's gifted in helping people in grief. But please, please don't try to, if you're in deep grief and feeling depressed and anxious, you don't have to do that. And if you, healing from grief does not mean that you stop loving or stop feeling or stop remembering. It just simply means you can live a healthy, fulfilled life while still missing and grieving over the person who has died. Those are not antithetical to each other.
So one more time, you guys have several times given us your website. Maybe I shouldn't say one more time. Maybe we'll try to sneak it in a few times. But if someone does want to connect with you, they want to read the blogs, they want to get a copy of your book, contact you, what's the website?
Comfortfortheday.com.
Okay, we're just writing it all out.
Mm-hmm. Just one word, comfortfortheday.com.
Okay, so we've got the website. Now, we've got to touch on one other thing, because I know, having gone through my training, both as a physician, I've been involved with faith communities over the years, and there was this approach to grief where they used to tell us that you go through these stages and ultimately, the grief is resolved. This doesn't ever seem to be the case, though. I mean, someone comes to an anniversary or something happens and the grief seems to arise again. Is there really a process where you get to a certain point and you never have to deal with it again?
Well, I think as long as we love, we will always have pinnacles of sorrow and sadness for whatever has been lost in our lives. So that's the nature of love. But we can do that in a more healthy and healing way, or a less healthy and destructive way. And so when we look at grief as something that enriches our lives, makes us a better human being, instead of something to be afraid of and to run from and to hide from, that really changes things for us. And so as we look into the future of our lives with anniversaries and birthdays and holidays and all kinds of things that would typically trigger a wave of some kind of emotional response, we can engage with that with a much healthier perspective. And one of the strongest things that we recommend to our clients and work through with them is when they're anticipating one of these anniversaries, or what I call first dates, is that we make a specific plan on purpose, intentional, to remember, to create a meal, to create an event that is all about remembering in a healthy and healing way rather than a destructive way.
I love this. So instead of when they're saying, oh no, Johnny's birthday is coming up here in a few weeks, instead of dreading that, you start looking forward to it and do something special. I think that's tremendous. Steve?
David, just real quickly, I started wanting to answer your first question about stages of grief. Mm-hmm. We don't ascribe to the five stages of grief for a person who is still alive. If you gave one of your patients a terminal diagnosis, you have pancreatic cancer and you probably have a year to live, that person very likely would go through shock, denial, anger, acceptance, bargaining, and then
bargaining and acceptance,
and then they die. And that's the experience of a person who has been given a terminal diagnosis. But the people who are left behind, it doesn't go linear. It's all over the map. And so when we realize that it's not a to-do list to check off, oh, I'm over my anxiety, I'm over my anger, I'm over my bargaining, those are things that will not work that way.
Thanks so much for clarifying that. Listen, you guys have been great. I know you have such a wealth of experience. We could only tap into a little of it. Thanks for sharing your own personal story and your commitment to helping others. I've jotted down your website. I've got simply comfortfortheday.com.
Correct.
I've got that correct?
Correct.
Hopefully a lot of folks will reach out to you and take advantage of your resources. Thanks so much to both of you.
We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you, David. This has been delightful.
Thank you, David.
And to each one of you, our listeners, thank you so much for joining us for today's show. Hopefully it gives you some insights to help you on your journey through grief. For all of us, I'm Dr. David DeRose, wishing you the very best of health.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.